Hello and welcome to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé and Gillian DeBias.
Ahead in the next hour, we'll be hearing what bookshops in Stockholm, Eindhoven and Toronto are discovering from their local readers.
And as we await the release of Berlusconi's album of songs, we've compiled our own top 10 tunes by politicians and world leaders.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
And we have a good stack of magazines on the table to go through together with our colleague Ariel Childs.
All that right here in The Review, right here on Monocle 24. Hello, Gillian.
Hello, nice to see you here.
Happy Saturday.
I have very happy Saturday. It was nice to see you here. I thought you were going to maybe spend the weekend in Toronto. No.
I mean, you were producing yesterday's Midori House with Nancy Durham. We talked about the trip to Toronto ever so briefly, and it was a very sort of quick in and out, which was fine. Because I said it's that time of year in Toronto, which is so transitional. Mm-hmm. And actually, the day started quite nice, and then by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were running around with some clients, and it was already you just could feel from like Timmins or somewhere northern Ontario, it was already sort of approaching zero, and the day had sort of started at 15. So I was happy to scamper back to the plane.
Why we're both here, but it's actually quite fun because either I'm in the studio and you're in the newsroom, or vice versa. So it's actually nice on a Saturday. We have newspapers, we have magazines,
I know.
We have coffee. It's
absolutely,
great, Tyler.
Yeah, it's quite funny because we've got a bit of a stack of magazines to get through and also the newspapers as well. It's actually, I was just looking at the New York Times, and I was saying last week, I love getting this special copy that we receive of the New York Times, which is a sort of a slightly slimmed down version, but it's still on real newsprint, which is wonderful. And so anyone waking up on the East Coast or also in Europe who gets a copy, there's a great story this morning. It says... And it's a front page piece. It's a few old pros on the subway picking pockets by slitting them. It says, in the world of crime statistics, there is a certain subsection of victim on the city subways, a reveler who, overserved during a night in the town, nods off in a train. He wakes up with a flapping, precision-cut hole in his trousers and cool, thin air, where his wallet used to be.
Isn't it nice to have nice writing in a newspaper?
It is, and I think it's just, you know, that's a story which took research. You know, it didn't come off of a newswire, and it's sort of a great sort of piece.
Well, we've dispatched one of our researchers, and he's actually going to go to one of the printing presses that they do in London here. So next week we hope to have a little report.
Yeah, because I think so far as I've seen this paper, and I've seen the South China Morning Post, but today we've got also the FT and the Herald Tribune, and a lot of other things we'll be talking about over the next hour on the program.
Well, you're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. Up next, we spin the globe and we talk to independent booksellers, and we want to get an idea of what's on their shelves. Our correspondents visited bookshops in Stockholm, Utrecht and Toronto.
It's just about 8 minutes past the hour here in London. You're with The Review on Monocle 24. As it's Saturday, the start of the weekend, and we thought it's a chance to talk about books, films and events that have caught our interest.
First, let's listen to what the booksellers are saying in different corners of the world. We start with a bookshop in Stockholm.
My name is Niklas Björkholm. I'm a bookseller in Hedengren's bookshop in Stockholm, Sweden. Well, right now it's the Swedish poet Thomas Tranströmer who received the Nobel Prize. And we sell him in English, French, German, Spanish, Italian and Swedish. Well, Jonathan Franzen sells well everywhere, so even we do. I mean, the Freedom, the latest book in paperback now. And we sell a lot of Umberto Eco, both in Italian, Swedish and English. It's just recently published in English. Bookshop is half Swedish, half non-Swedish, so we have books in 9 languages. We are not that good in computer books, but otherwise we stock the most of things. Everyone should read Telkamp, The Tower. I think it will be published in English this fall. Tornet in Swedish and Turm in German. Magnificent book.
My name is Marijn Schipper. I'm an employee of Boekhandel Bijleveld, bookstore Bijleveld in Utrecht in the Netherlands. I'm a poet as well. And the bookstore is a bookstore with a lot of literary books, a lot of poetry, a lot of novels, a lot of arts as well, a lot of books on art, on history, on philosophy, classical books. such a bookstore, Boekhandel Bijleveld, is. Well, there are several novels that are interesting. The book by Anna Enquist, The Verdovers in Dutch, The Anesthesiist in English, and it's a book about a psychiatrist who has come out of a period of mourning. His wife died and has a new patient, but there's something wrong with this patient that he can't get his hands on. And to make matters worse, his the wife of his brother, she takes care of this boy, but there's a relational problem between the two. And let's walk to the poetry section. Two books which are very interesting are a book by Jorge Luis Borges. Recently, all his poetry has been translated into Dutch. We had some translations already, but now all his poetry, and it's translated in a very formalistical, formal way, which means that the poems are in the same, are rhyming like the original poems. The Dutch poems are, if you think about form, they're the same. And the other one, which is a very interesting book of poems, is the book by Thomas Tanströmer. The Dutch title is De Herinneringen Zien Mij, Memories See Me, Are Seeing Me. And he's a poet who is incredible. His images are really powerful. For instance, he has the sentence, "Waking up is like a parachute jump out of a dream," which is very, it goes very slowly, but very directly. It's, well, the way it goes when you wake up. So I'm very glad to say this book is it's a bestseller.
Kyle Buckley, Type Books, Toronto, Canada. Popular right now, definitely 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami, Patrick DeWitt's The Sisters Brothers, Joan Didion's new memoir, Blue Nights. I would recommend Autobiography of Childhood by Sina Karas. It's a fantastically sort of interesting contemplative novel that interrogates family dynamic and language all at the same time, and trauma, and it's just also excellent, beautiful writing.
And that was our review of bookshops in Stockholm and Eindhoven and Toronto. I really like that package because it feels like the weekend.
I love the fact that Stockholm has books in 9 languages. Like,
I know.
Yeah, isn't that?
Well, it is interesting when you go into some of the really good bookshops in Stockholm. The only thing I always sort of feel sometimes is that there's not a super cozy bookstore. It sort of, it veers between quite... academic feeling bookstores. And I feel there is actually room. But the one place I don't think you've been there, but there is a really, really wonderful place called Paper Cut, which sort of sounds like Paper Cup in Beirut, which we like.
Yes, no, totally.
And it's kind of the same food group. But I would say they've mastered that sense of being that place that you would want to go on a Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because it's DVDs, CDs, a smattering of books you'd want to read, and just every single magazine in the world.
And the nice thing is it stays up late, but not only does it stay up late, if people are passing by and they knock on the door, they'll open up for you. That's what happened last time I was in Beirut, and we knocked on the window and there she was and had a cup of coffee and they opened up for us.
No, well, we need one of those in the neighborhood here for sure.
I know. So now I'm going to play you that song you like.
Do.
And it's Hang With Me, but it's the acoustic version by Robin.
Great.
Will you tell me once again how we're gonna be just friends? If you're for real and not pretend, then I guess you can hang.
And that was Hang With Me by Robin. You are listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. We're back right after this.
J. Crew is thrilled to be shipping across the pond to our customers in the UK. Shop our famous collection of colourful cashmere and wardrobe staples for men, women and children. At J.Crew, you can always expect impeccable quality, design integrity and flawless customer service every time you shop. Visit jcrew.com for the full story.
K Keep abreast of everything from breaking news to fresh business opportunities with Monocle 24's lineup of live weekday current affairs programmes. The Globalist kicks off our day at 6 a.m. UK time with 2 hours of news, media reviews, weather and reports from our correspondents around the world. At midday UK time, The Briefing helps the North American East Coast get into gear with a brisk review of news and analysis. And at 18:30 UK time, Midori House gets a first read on stories hitting Asia's front pages and does a roundup with Monocle's editors. Finally, the Monocle Daily signs on for 2 hours at 2200 with a mix of our editors and special guest anchors to start the day in Asia. Keep an eye and an ear on the world, right here on Monocle 24.
And welcome back to The Review here on Monocle 24. It's just about 19 minutes. It is 19 minutes past the hour here in Studio One at Midori House. Well, at Monocle, we like to uncover new music coming from different parts of the world. And in the past few weeks, we've checked in with our friends in Korea and Finland to hear what's on their playlists.
Well, this week we decided to try something different. As we heard the news that Berlusconi has delayed his new album, we started to think, what other politicians have sung songs? So we plundered the archive to find songs performed by politicians' world leaders.
And our Nancy Durham compiled Monocle's very own top of the political pops.
Kind of newsy week where good stories can so easily be lost. My personal favorite involves that most astute of politicians, Silvio Berlusconi. He was just about to release an album called True Love, featuring himself on vocals accompanied by a guitarist friend. But what with the Euro crisis, Greece in such a bad way, and Italy not far behind, was this the right time for love? Mr. Berlusconi, with his own shaky government and a few criminal matters pending, has decided now is not the time for love songs. Plenty of journalists have reacted with appreciation, seeming to feel this is good news, giving our ears a Berlusconi break. I can't say I agree. I think now is exactly the time for cheering up. So here at Monocle 24, we are bucking the trend with this, our own political Top of the Pops. Rather than wait for Silvio's new hits, we've uncovered an old track of him singing a French love song in Paris some time ago. Here he is at number 10. At number 9, we have the American president who spared us his voice and gave us his saxophone instead, Bill Clinton. Number 8, and we have Mikko Alatalo, the Finnish politician Finns keep in power, so he doesn't return to the stage. Here he is, singing about everyone needing someone to love them.
Ei mun takki kaipaa neulaa, ei lankaa, mutta sielu kaipaa seuraa parempaa. Ei näissä kapakoissa kuule runoa, ei tankaa, pelkkää juopunutta puheen sorinaa. Kun mennyt kaikki on, niin jäljelle jää vain tuo ihmisen ikävä toisen luo.
Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper is lucky number 7 with Imagine.
Imagine.
Former U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft flies in at number 6 with his self-penned chest beater, Let the Eagle Soar.
Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar.
In from the coldie with a golden oldie at number 5, it's Vladimir Putin with Blueberry Hill.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still. On Blueberry Hill.
And piling on plenty of extra cheese sees a new entry from the U.S. presidential hopeful Herman Cain at number 4 singing, Imagine There's No Pizza.
Imagine there's no pizza. I couldn't if I tried. Eating all the tacos. Oh, Kentucky Fried.
Number 3 is Mikhail Gorbachev with a traditional Russian lament, a love song to his late wife, Rosa.
Разорвав любви живую нить, и зачем листкам под слоем пыли счастье наше отдали хранить, храня так много дорогого. Чуть пожелтевшие листы, как будто все вернулось снова, как будто вновь со мною ты.
At number 2, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez with a certain U.S. Secretary of State on his mind.
Soy mal querido por Hillary Clinton. Yo tampoco la quiero. La ra 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 ra. La ra 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 ra.
And finally, at number 1, it's Kim Jong-il and a few of his friends.
And that was our Nancy Durham, a wonderful package that you, Jillian, compiled with her and also clearly a battalion of researchers. Great piece.
Well, not just the research, the whole office was contributing. It was one of those assignments you get where everyone decides they want to have a say and they have an idea. So all day everyone's like, I thought of another one. And we know there are more. We were going to start looking for the dictators. We were really...
Well, this is the type of research assignment as well for the, you know, that comes up for Christmas time and all of the year-end things that we need to do. It was a really great piece. We went away for a short break. We're back with our magazine review right after this. And you are with The Review here on Monocle 24. It's just about 26 minutes after the hour here in London. That'd be the hour of noon, 26 after in if you're waking up on the North American East Coast with Tyler Brulé and Jillian DeBise. And we're joined by our colleague, Ariel Childs, who's just 2 floors up. She's the development director at our agency, Wink Creative. And this is it's my favorite part of the day because this is when we do all of the magazines. And maybe just before we get to the magazines, though, I'm not sure if anyone's seen the papers, but just the front page of the Financial Times this morning, really interesting. Diamonds are not forever is the headline. And it says that that one of course, the top business dynasties in the world and certainly in South Africa, that the Oppenheimer family, synonymous with South Africa's mining industry for almost a century, is with a heavy heart, in quotes, selling out of the De Beers Diamond Group for $5.1 billion US dollars. And we'll be talking a little bit more about the papers in a bit. Good morning, Ariel. Good afternoon at this point.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Good. What did you? Where did you go first to buy your magazines this morning? What do you have for us?
I went to Greens on Marylebone High Street, which is just a treasure trove of everything possible.
The only thing about Greens, and we love it, but I wish that they actually would do what they do at New York newsstands, is that you just, it's trouble finding things. You don't get full facings there, so you really have to have a good route around, don't you?
It's true, and there's some dusty ones, too. Yeah. I had to...
Yeah, you feel sometimes that they miss some. When it comes time to sort of, you know, clear out the magazines every month, they've missed a few.
I was a little disconcerted when the man at the till started flipping through my magazine as I was paying for it, too.
As in what he'd never seen it before.
Well, yeah, and just sort of while my card was transacting, he kind of decided he'd crease the spine a little bit.
What do you want to start with this morning?
I kind of wanted to look at interiors magazines, if that's okay, just because I feel like November's a really a time when we're all kind of looking inside the house a little bit and thinking about Christmas and thinking about how we're going to do our house. And obviously the AD franchise kind of really stands out, I think, for all of us in the office. And yeah, I picked up our sort of usual favorites, which is German AD and Spanish AD.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, the November issues for both of them are really stellar issues. And German AD does their annual issue on Paris, which is always a delight. And then Spanish AD is just such a rich overview of things happening in Spain. And even though there's some troubles there and everyone's sort of questioning what's going on, it seems that design is still really, really happening.
And also for a November issue as well, it's not, I mean, you know, given, as you said, what's happening with the Spanish economy, it's not exactly thin on advertising.
No, it's not. And no, not at all.
The, I mean, right now, when you look at what's happening with, you know, certainly a lot of major magazine or let's say media groups who have a series of the same titles in different markets, you see the same stories, you know, repeated again and again. You know that if you wait 3 months, you know, you will see that story sort of re-syndicated to another title. But it's, I mean, you were commenting before we went on air just that there's somehow the Spanish really main, you know, you know where you are when you read this magazine.
Mm. Absolutely. And I love, there's a piece in The Well where they have some profiles of people. And my Spanish is rudimentary, but I still so enjoy getting an introduction into, you know, great movers and shakers in Spain, whether they're in Seville, Brazil, Barcelona or Madrid. And it's just really excellent photographs of interiors, their artwork, and then just good bite-sized nuggets of who they are and what they're doing.
It's also, I think, one of those magazines which, I mean, particularly the Spanish edition, it really sort of transports you and makes you think about what life could be like in Seville in the right townhouse, mm-hmm. or what life would be like if you had that sprawling apartment in Madrid, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And like tiles, lots of tiles.
Yeah, exactly. Suddenly you want to sort of go through a completely new design language.
Isn't it nice that you still have that pleasure principle though with magazines that, you know, I don't care what people say. It's that, you know, escapism. You imagine yourselves between those sheets, between the pages, in those places. And that's what I just love about this.
No, I remember an editor at House and Garden saying that it really was the ultimate porn for women, and I do believe that.
The going back to you know, the various people that they introduce you to in Spain. This I think it's if I've got the story right, it's different people who've used IKEA, I think, in their houses. It looks like I think that's what the story is about. Again, my Spanish being more rudimentary than yours. Let's go over to the German edition, because the German edition has Margaret Meyer, sadly, is no longer there as editor. I think it's had a couple of funny design changes. Mm. I also feel like they've changed the repro on it slightly, but nevertheless, still a strong magazine from a market which has a very strong design heritage.
Paper definitely feels thinner too.
I think so.
Yeah. Which might be affecting the repro also.
Which I don't understand why, you know, and Gillian, as you just pointed out now, that I know we talk about it a lot, I think, within the covers of our own magazine, but you know, why publishers, you know, at this time, they should be investing in better paper stock, and this is the only way that you're going to define yourself in a different way, you know, versus a digital world.
Well, people are often so surprised when, you know, I tell them that I still have my fix of magazines. But you'll see people in airport magazine stores, and they'll look through, and then they will gravitate to something that feels good and feels heavy and touches. And when you see people reading them, they take them with a care that I don't think you can ever get on a tablet. And I'm looking at some of the magazines here, and that's why it's nice for a weekend fix. We get so many words in our life on our computer screens, on newspapers, and suddenly you can linger on photography. Four pages of photography, which, you know, especially on a weekend, but other times it's just inspiring. You get a different sense of something that inspires you.
It was funny. A couple of weeks ago, we invited a reader for dinner, and occasionally we do these editors' dinners, and we have a variety of colleagues and different media partners come along. And it was because one of our media partners, advertisers, said, well, you know, tell me, you know, why do you still like magazines? And, you know, versus, you know, and he, you know, he was talking, but he said, I don't have an iPad because I'm on a Bloomberg terminal, four terminals in front of me all day. Hmm. And he said, the last thing I want to do is go home and indulge in my media in a backlit environment. And I thought that was just, it was so interesting because, as he said, he goes, I am of course the absolute core audience, which should be, you know, picking up this type of device. But he said, because of just my working situation all day, because I can't look at a screen when I get home in the evening.
Yeah.
But don't you find you go to your friends' houses and you see that they're a bit like you, they collect them. They're collector's items. You know, you have a stash, you refer back to them. You know,
absolutely.
They're not disposable. You refer back to them. You get a little bit of inspiration. And I find most of my friends, we sort of will then after dinner, we'll say, oh, yes, you have that issue that was 3 years old. I love that one. Call us magazine geeks, but we are.
I also think photography, just especially in the realm of interior magazines, where you're looking at really great photography, you can really dig in and sort of, you almost want to see what's happening on that console and what the book titles are in the bookshelf. And I think you don't, if I was to imagine this magazine, the Spanish AD, on an iPad, I don't think I would get that texture of the environment on the device.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, you spend much more time. These are really involved photographs, and you sort of want to root around in them a little bit. And I just don't think you would do that otherwise.
Is there anything that stood out to you story-wise in the German AD that you would like to navigate listeners towards?
Well, I thought the cover story, which is the last story in The Well, which is the Florence Lopez flat, I mean, I just thought this was such a delightful, very Parisian sort of, you know, upper floor flat. And I thought it was just really gorgeous in terms of an interior. There are so many wonderful objects in it. It is it's just eye candy for color. And I think her taste in terms of art is just, I don't know, I love it. I love every single thing about this flat. And again, you know, looking at her children's room and seeing the Periand day bed and this sort of almost Corbusier feeling treatment for a children's room, and then seeing the Cat in the Hat and the train. I just, everything about it, I think, is really, really wonderful.
Tell me, when you look at a story like that, are you responding as much to the quality of photography, or you're almost visually sort of rooting around that apartment and dissecting it and being inspired by it?
I think it's both. I mean, I think the photography and the quality of the interior go hand in hand, and that's what makes a really great interiors magazine. When you have a photographer who goes in, who can find the shots and also use the right lenses so that you know, you're not, this is obviously a small flat, but it is done in a way so that you understand the objects in it and you're navigating around it, and it just feels very, very rich.
Mm. I've got the autumn issue, so this is the autumn 2011 issue of Numero and Ariel, you'll recall me, this is a magazine that had its birth about the same time back in the wallpaper days. Mm-hmm. It was very much a contemporary at the time. And it hasn't changed, and I'm wondering what your view is of that, because the grid hasn't changed. It is exactly the same magazine, and you're talking what? I mean, this is the men's edition, so it's a little bit newer, but nevertheless, it follows the same format as the women's title. And what's your view on that? Do you think it's good that they stick to their guns, because you know they've definitely sort of, they've got their beat, or do you feel that, you know, magazines do need to evolve in today's context a little bit more, or do you find comfort through repetition?
I have to say I find comfort in repetition. I always look at Numero. I think Jonathan Wingfield is a brilliant editor, and I also note that I think what he did with Paradis was amazing. And fashion changes a lot, and I think that to create a template is really important for that. I go into a newsstand and I see the art issue and, you know, multiple covers, and I feel very disenfranchised, actually, from the brand sometimes when it changes too much.
Right. Julie, what do you think?
Well, I was wondering how loyal, in your work, you have to look at all the magazines, but in your personal life, how loyal are you to the magazines you get?
I'm pretty loyal. I just wish I could keep up with them all. I'm a very loyal New Yorker reader, but then I get completely overwhelmed. And then I do like to keep a pace with new magazines that are being launched. I feel lately there's so many sort of men's magazines coming out onto the market, and they all feel very undifferentiated. So I obviously want to know what those products are. But I think the really core stable, like a numero, I keep going back to over and over again.
We're going to go away for a short break. It's just coming up to 21 minutes to the hour here in London. We are back with this. This is The Review.
J. Crew is thrilled to be shipping across the pond to our customers in the UK. Shop our famous collection of colourful cashmere and wardrobe staples for men, women and children. At J.Crew, you can always expect impeccable quality, design integrity and flawless customer service every time you shop. Visit jcrew.com for the full story.
For a concise and sharply edited overview of the best clips, quotes and quips of the week, tune in to The Curator every Sunday here on Monocle 24. Hosted by a different guest editor every edition, The Curator will point you to all the programmes you might have missed and is also the perfect digest of the week in world affairs, business, culture and design. The Curator, in association with Rolex, right here on Monocle 24.
Welcome back to Studio One here at Midori House. This is The Review with Tyler Brûlé and Gillian DeBias. I've got the copy of Zoo here, which has gone through a bit of a significant redesign. If you want to talk about a cover treatment that's gone on to this, it's really quite remarkable.
And who publishes that? What country is that?
It's a bit of a Dutch UK hybrid, because this is the project of Brian Adams, and in fact, cover story Carmen Cass. Still looking good, right? Mm-hmm. Shot by Brian Adams, also a bit of a beast. But they've gone for a bit of a format change as well. But it's as you're saying, it is quite something at a time when everyone, of course, talks about death of print and challenge for print. There are still so many small niche publishing projects which are coming out at the moment.
How much does this sell for?
I think it's just up on the top. Is it up in the top left corner? How much is it?
Well, it's £7 in the UK. Okay.
Right.
Which seems, this is a hefty magazine.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good value.
€7.50. Yeah.
I don't know how much your little magazine troll was, but I went for my papers. I mean, I didn't walk away with a lot this morning, but I had my newspapers, and there's a stack of other magazines that we'll probably chat about. But it was almost a £40 bill.
Yeah, good investment. Though.
But it is a good investment, and half will go into the bin, and and half will go in, or maybe a quarter will go into my office for just reference, and some will go home because I like them so much.
Yeah, and you start with coffee, then you have them over tea, then a glass of wine. But, they'll last the month.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we go to Norway? We're going to have a little song. This is Annie with No Easy Love. That was Annie with No Easy Love. Do you like that, Gillian?
Nice Saturday feel.
It is. I know. It's just kind of a bit of a hip swear. It's good. I was just going back to, we were talking about Zoo before we went to the song, and I was just looking for Brian Adams on the masthead, and I like that he calls himself Zookeeper.
What do you call yourself, Tyler?
Yeah, I feel like that sometimes as well. Chief Wrangler, anyway. Errol, you've got, I think, the last of your, not AD, but US edition of Architectural Digest there.
Yes.
With quite an amazing cover.
Cover.
They always go, they're on a celebrity shtick, though.
And they always have been.
Yeah.
I mean, that is their beat. And I thought it was very striking. You have Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi, and nice photograph. And I was sort of intrigued. So I opened it up, and then I was taken to the advertising for, and I have to go online and see what these people do, but there is a company called Venfield, which seems so out of character with anything that's happening in the interiors.
And you might want to describe it for our listeners, Ariel.
Yeah. It's two men who are basically naked, and then, I was going to say it's a woman, but it could also be a guy as well. It looks like a tranny.
Yeah, she's very mannish.
But what are they selling? Lighting?
Lighting, it looks like, for throws and mirrored objects and, you know.
Shocking.
Porn palace stuff.
Yeah, so, unbelievable.
Yeah, I just want to know who the art director is for that. But then flipping through it, you know, I Margaret Russell's now taken over Paige Rentz's editorship of this magazine. And it feels still very much in the sort of Architectural Digest. It hasn't had any sort of big transgression.
Also in the sense it hasn't been influenced by the international titles.
No. It's very much what it has always been.
What's happening in Ellen DeGeneres' house?
Well, they've had a house makeover, and there's lots of masks. And so I was looking at all the masks and the tribal art and wondering where that all came from and trophies and things. And that was sort of interesting. And then I got to the shoe closet, which has two sets of shoes. So you have Ellen's sneakers and Porsche's
heels.
Stilettos. And they've made a big thing about it, and I thought that was very, very interesting. But then I was a little discouraged because I went to the next story, and the same picture was in the next story, which was, again, the shoe closet. So
This is
a completely different story.
Right.
So
Do we think that, is it a happy house that Ellen DeGeneres has? No, because sometimes, I think it was a couple of issues ago, we saw Jennifer Aniston's house, and it just made me sad.
Yeah.
Maybe she's
sad. Can feel the loneliness through the photographs.
You could. It was the most soul. And also, they also went to Cher's house a couple of issues ago as well. Mm. Sad.
But Jennifer Aniston goes down to Mexico all the time. She's always on vacation, so she must not spend a lot of time in her house.
Well, it looked like that.
Yeah, so.
I want to just jump to something not quite pictorial, but it just I'm looking forward to sitting on the sofa the rest of this later today if we can plow through getting the magazine out the door. But it's just the best of Anthony Lane in this week's New Yorker, and it's his review of the film Tower Heist, and it says, at the risk of invoking Freud, so you have to wonder why movie stars are attracted to big long films about towers. The Towering Inferno had Steve McQueen, Paul Newman, Faye Dunaway, and William Holden. It also had Fred Astaire and O.J. Simpson. It says a pairing so exquisite that Luis Buñuel must have wished he thought of it first. It says, now we have Tower Heist, which features Ben Stiller, Eddie Murphy, Alan Alda, Casey Affleck, Tay Leone, Matthew Broderick, and Judd Hirsch. None of these, I concede, are up there with Fred, but then who isn't? It says, what counts is safety in numbers. Which I thought was good. We're going to go and just listen to a little piece continuing our magazine theme. The world of architecture, as we know, is currently undergoing a grassroots revival through the popularity of fanzines, niche, small circulation publications. A new exhibition at the Architectural Association here in London attempts to highlight this growing movement. It's called Archezines, and it showcases 60 such publications from around the globe. Yesterday, we sent Daniel Giacopelli to find out what was happening there.
I started finding and collecting architecture publications from book fairs, from my travels, and finding things that people were producing, whether they were little artists made zines or architects making their own publications that were somehow alternative to the mainstream. They wanted to do something that hadn't existed before. So the Archezines project is a celebration of this activity that's taking place now around the world. And the exhibition at the Architectural Association showcases 60 fanzines, journals, magazines, newsletters from over 20 countries that people can come and see and read and flick through and form their opinions about what this new generation of publishing activity means.
So this started from your travels. You would go into a bookstore and you would see a small little publication and you'd say, oh, that's interesting, and then you just started collecting them.
Exactly. It started off just as something I'd noticed, even in London, a place like Publisher Be Damned or independent bookshops. And then anytime you meet an architect, you do a studio visit, you suddenly see things that people are making, things that people are producing in printed form.
And lots of editors here, it seems, have come
It's incredible. They've been flying in from around the world. Mimi Zeiger's just flown in from Los Angeles. The guys from Face B have just got off the train from Paris. People are flying in from Portugal, Berlin, everywhere. It's fantastic. It's a big meeting of people all passionate and interested in this, in publishing and in making something in printed matter.
I'm Mimi Zeiger. I published Maximum Maxim, and it's a zine about architecture and publishing aphorisms.
So how did that get started?
I created a zine called Loud Paper starting in 1997 that ran for many years. And because of that interest, I then created a small show on architecture zines in 2008 called A Few Zines. It was at Studio X in New York. When the Studio X book came out, they had a cabaret to celebrate everyone who had been exhibited at Studio X, and that was at Storefront for Art and Architecture. I created Maximum Maxim as an event piece about publishing and architecture.
Sebastian Martinez-Barat from Face B. Face B is an architectural journal based in Paris. At the beginning, Face B was a project when we were a student, and the idea of Face B was not to making a review for the fascination of the object, but more the idea was to set up a kind of little research lab, and the paper things, like the publication, was a kind of excuse for thinking together on really specific problematics.
And how did you get involved with this project?
Really basically because we are architects and we are questioning our practices, and we're thinking that architecture is not into building things. And it's one of the biggest parts of an architect is to write and to think with people in this idea of a little research lab. So basically it was necessary to set up this kind of structure for doing architecture.
I'm Tom Keeley, and I published America Deserted We Visited.
So how did you get involved with this project and your publication in general?
I met Elias a few years ago when I published a zine in Sheffield, about Sheffield, from 2004 to 2008. And Elias heard about it and stayed in touch with him. And then earlier this year I did a trip across the States. And that's where my current zine, the America Deserted We Visited one, came from. It was kind of looking at, I was interested in the kind of the problems facing cities over here and saw that they were happening on a bigger scale, kind of in the States, and quicker in some cases. Just wanted to go across the country and kind of look at what's going on while kind of the oil gradually runs out, kind of after a similar tour by Rainer Bannon.
And do you all feel that print has a special kind of resonance that the internet doesn't? I mean, you could easily all start a blog, and you could easily all do it much cheaper, I'm sure, online. I mean, why print, and why is that important?
For me, print is important because it's slow. It takes a long time to publish something, so it's indecisive to make a structure of people who are thinking together on a specific problematic. And it doesn't happen on a digital publication because it's fast. So when you are building a printing matter, you have you need to think together. Really, in a kind of not scientific research lab, but in a way, it's a kind of alternative scientific project. It's not a fascination of the paper thing. Of course, we love magazine, but that's not the idea. The idea is more the way we produce it, that can produce a specific content that digital age, digital printed, perhaps can't.
Mimi, would you agree?
I think there's always been this architectural fascination with print publications, that we like objects, we like buildings, you like to hold things. My own research sort of is in between what is digital and what is print. For instance, Maximum Maxim was originally produced as a YouTube video, so it wasn't actually intended to become a print zine. And the whole research, it's all these aphorisms about publishing. And about how it came at a time when everyone was talking about how the web has killed print. And so print is dead, the web is dead, the book will kill the building. All of these kinds of sort of slogans are captured in Maximum Maxim. And so that's really, this becomes this, the print object becomes a commentary on the kind of meta commentary that's going on right now.
And what about the circulation of these things? I mean, they're quite small, correct?
Yeah, they're definitely quite small. I think they're very, I don't know, the reason I kind of like them in the first place is because they're small run. You can feel the humanity that someone's poured into it. It's like you can't keep and treasure a blog. You can bookmark it, sure, but you kind of forget about it. I want, like you said, I want something to hold and to hoard, maybe. That's just me. The circulation, I think it's so niche in many ways that it's quite nice that the circulation's down. But also, like you were saying, the middle ground between kind of the lo-fi kind of printedness of it and kind of taking the best bits of the internet, kind of the hi-fi stuff, and combining the two is the best way it works out. So you can have quite a big reach, quite a small kind of beautiful thing as well.
And what about the physical creation of the publication? You all teamed up with different studios to do this, or different manufacturers? I mean, where are these made? You make them yourselves?
More or less.
In your house. Wow.
Basically, it's kind of homemade. So homemade. We have a printer, but that's all.
I didn't even have an illustrator when I made Maximum Maxim. It's done in Word. And it was actually kind of intended to reference back to old zine culture. So the whole thing was sort of printed out in Word and cut and paste together. There's misalignments. There's pages that have strange things on them. It was made very analog and then photographed and then made into a video. So it was, again, it's this discussion about the making of a zine and where it winds up digitally and then the distribution. And I think talking about distribution, like in print runs, like, I don't know, it was about 100 copies I ended up making total. But having each one of those copies goes to people I know, and this has always been true of zines, like we are all connected, the three of us, by trading zines and trading these small publications.
Talking about making it, I borrowed my friend's work printer and just went in there after hours and just printed them all off and then hand printed the rest. So it's kind of, I think with zines, because it's more of a really personal reaction to something, you can feel compelled to do it and just find a way to make it happen.
And that was our Daniel Giacopelli reporting from the Architectural Association from their exhibition on fanzines. We're almost out of time. Ariel Childs, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week. Jillian Tobias, thank you.
Thank you, Tyler.
And that is all from the Review here in London. The Urbanist with Andrew Tuck is up next. Music throughout the day. News at the top of the hour.
Das ist Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.